You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
What's up, Wisconsin? How y'all doing today? It's officially hump day. Across most of Wisconsin, gorgeous today. I know I've been trying to enjoy the sunshine from inside, looking out my window. Ooh, that looks beautiful out there. I hope you all get a chance to actually get outside and enjoy some of this beautiful fall weather. I had promised myself I was not going to talk about the Brewers after their absolutely devastating loss in game three of the wild card. But I find myself forced to. Jesse Winker, who played an absolutely terrible season for the Brewers and then got traded and ended up with the Mets and has now had a really good season, is a huge, enormous jerk. And he's also a sore winner. Every time he got up at when he was at bat during the playoffs, the fans made an adjustment to his last name, Winker, substituted a different vowel for the A and chanted that out a bunch. And he's a sore winner for a couple of reasons. In game three, he ended up basically being the insurance run after the heartbreaking three-run homer that was smacked to put the Mets ahead by a run. And then Winker, Wanker, Winker came in and also scored a run. And the guy took his helmet off and, like, slammed it on the ground. It was so ridiculous. Like, that's enough to dislike the guy. He tends to be a jerk. He chats a bunch. He was jawing at Willy Adames when he was on base in game three. Now, keep in mind, he's on base in game three, and they're ahead a run, and it's the ninth inning. Like, just shut your trap and enjoy the fact that you're likely going to win the wild card and go on. But no, he was jawing at Willy Adames, and he was like, hey, why don't you do something about it? Like, challenging Willy to a fight. Like, you are a huge, huge, huge jerk. And then yesterday, there's an article in the Journal Sentinel where Jesse Winker told a reporter, like, went on the record, was like, I really, really hate Milwaukee.
What?
Yes. Like, you are a professional athlete. You don't need to hate Milwaukee. By the way, we paid your salary with the tickets that we bought that season, right? Your overblown, overpaid butt that produced very little for the Brewers. Like, just such a bad sportsman. I think that just, it tarnishes the game. Anyways, I had to complain about that. With that, I will probably turn the page on the baseball season. I know I'm not all that interested in what's going on now in the baseball playoffs. But Jess, and folks, Jess, one of my team that helps me out with the Maggie Dawn Show, always happy to have her. If you call in,
you got to go through me.
You got to go through Jess, part of the Maggie Dawn Show team. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We got a great show planned for you all today. I am so excited. We've got Attorney General Eric Holder that's going to join me after this first segment of the show. Again, one of the perks of the job, you sometimes get to talk to your personal and professional heroes. General Holder, certainly one of those. At 2:30, because it is Wednesday, it is Sounds Like Change with Emily's List on the Maggie Dawn Show. We've got Sarah Spain, their Director of Strategic Communications, joining us, talking about how the 1 million young women that live in Wisconsin will be the difference maker on November 5th. If you know a young woman, if you are a young woman, you're not going to want to miss this with Sarah Spain of Emily's List at 2:30. Top of the hour, of course, it is Maggie and the Millionaires talking money, except this time, definitely not millionaires. I have two ladies that are nuns on the bus. How cool is this? Two sisters that fight for social and economic justice. Nuns on the Bus are in a nationwide bus tour. They stopped in Milwaukee yesterday. We're going to talk to two of those very nuns that are on the bus. And at 3:30, we've got Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. He was at Joe Biden's appearance yesterday. He just announced $4 million of county dollar investment in affordable housing. This is something that matters, not just in Milwaukee County, but statewide. We're going to be joined by the county executive. But I just wanted to share this with you, Jess, and everybody out there. I may not be talking about baseball, but one of the things that I love about the fall, even when the Brewers are out of the playoffs, is the fact that I've got this great dual citizenship, if you will. And by that, I mean, I was lucky enough to go to Marquette University on a scholarship for both my undergrad and my graduate degree in economics. And then I went to Madison for law school. So dual citizenship, I get to be like a Marquette basketball fan when MU plays UW in hoops. I wear both blue and gold and red and white. I look very uncoordinated because it's great.
I love it.
And as an undergrad, I didn't have the wonderful ritual at American universities of football in the fall, but I got to enjoy it as a law student at Madison. So I always get a kick out of this time of year because the Bucks are starting soon. You got all the college football. I love college hoops. I always look forward to that. Certainly excited to see what Marquette can do this year. But I can deal with the Brewers' loss because I've got other sporting ventures that I can look to and a lot of fan boxes that I get to check. But I would be remiss, of course, if I didn't talk a little bit about the fact that the Jets just fired their head coach as well. Got to talk a little NFL football. If you're not aware of what just went down, of course, everybody knows that Aaron Rodgers went to the Jets, came out first game last season, blew his ACL. He's now back. The Jets are 2-3, not doing very well. And they basically shocked the NFL when they fired their head coach. Now, here's what's actually going on here. Like, let me add it to the list of reasons I hate Aaron Rodgers. Apparently, this is the Haterade Festivus for me. I start with Jesse Winker Wanker, and I go to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers basically is calling the shots at the Jets, clearly. He's buddy-buddies with the offensive coordinator, who really should be the one that's getting fired because their offense isn't producing. But he's Aaron Rodgers' BFF. Aaron Rodgers basically plucked him from the Packers, took him to the Jets so they can their head coach. It's just yet another reason to hate Aaron Rodgers. I mean, what is wrong with this guy? He's a low accountability kind of guy. It's everybody's fault except Aaron Rodgers.
I think low accountability would actually be a vast improvement.
Yeah, because it implies some accountability.
Right.
Anyways, I will continue to talk a little sports with y'all because we all need a break from the politics of the day. But I would be remiss if I did not share with you Mitt Romney yesterday. Boy, I think it was yesterday or the day before, absolutely tore into Donald Trump and by extension, Eric Hovde and every other GOP MAGA cult lackey that continues to lie and potentially cost people's lives in the wake of Hurricane Helene and now the onslaught, the incoming terror that is Milton. Let's take a listen to what Mitt Romney had to say yesterday about Donald Trump's lies.
President Trump told us that the people in Springfield are eating dogs and cats, all right? I mean, you know, he likewise said that FEMA money, our emergency money, instead of helping the people that have been hit by the hurricane, is being used to help illegals. I mean, he just makes it up. And so he is able to spew enough disinformation that that the Chinese must be smiling. And now Kamala Harris also says things that are inaccurate. I mean, her pitch is that he's going to put in place Project 25. And he keeps saying, no, I'm not doing Project 25. And she keeps saying, yes, you are, and runs ads about Project 25. Well, I don't know who you believe in that regard, but I surely think that President Trump, when it comes to a holiday from the truth, he's taken the longest vacation.
So let me translate in Mitt Romney speak, right? He basically just said, I'm going to be voting for Kamala Harris. Like, that's mm-hmm. what that all sort of boils down to without him actually saying it. One of the things I talked to the attorney general about in our next segment is Project 2025. So you're not going to want to miss that. But I also wanted to address a question from yesterday. Kurt from Madison was very patient. Folks, at the Maggie Dawn Show, I get lots of help from lots of different producers. Sometimes I'm getting produced out of Madison, sometimes the AUK. So patience with us if we don't get your calls in. But Kurt from Madison wanted to know, hey, isn't Eric Hovde and isn't it Donald Trump, when they lie about FEMA running out of money and they say there's money getting diverted, why isn't that like yelling fire in a crowded theater? Why aren't they potentially liable civilly for that? Especially because it's acting real harm on Republicans and Democrats and independents alike in these regions where this misinformation has taken hold. Here's the trick, Kurt. It may seem like it's similar to yelling fire in a crowded theater, but it's not. Political speech is basically sacrosanct in the United States. And unlike false advertising, if you will, where there's a product and if the product doesn't do what you say it does in an ad, that can be grounds for a false advertising civil suit. And those happen frequently, most often brought amongst competitors in a particular industry. But when you engage in political speech, there just isn't a legal theory to proceed on. So even if you're speaking lies, you're saying things that aren't true, if it's political speech, it is sacrosanct. In other words, the First Amendment protects lies, especially when you're engaging in campaign political speech. But of course, that does not make it any less morally repugnant and a clear indicator of the unfitness of Eric Hovde and Donald Trump to be an elected official in this country. You don't have to take my word for it. Just listen to Mitt Romney. Folks, when we come back, we're going to listen to that interview with Attorney General Eric Holder. You're not going to want to miss it. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Where are you?
Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
Get pumped up, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's my privilege and honor, so excited to be joined today in honor of the MLB playoffs and the inclusion of Negro League statistics finally in Major League Baseball statistics by the youngest living player of the Negro Leagues. He is 89 years young, folks. His name is Dennis Bose Biddle, and he almost did not play in the Negro Leagues. Mr. Biddle, when we were talking last, you left off with, you were about ready to head off to play football on a full ride scholarship at Grambling State. And you got a phone call from the Chicago American Giants, one of the Negro League teams, and they wanted you to come up and try out, sir. What happened next?
Well, I really didn't understand trout if I was on the team. But I wanted to play baseball, and I went to Chicago, and I guess I tried out for the team. I thought I was on the team. I tried out, and I made the team. So I joined the Giants in 1953 as a Negro League ball player. I signed
and
a
you
contract.
Were, and you were how old, sir, when you started playing Major League Baseball for the Negro Leagues?
I was 17 years old. I was I had just graduated from high school, and 2 weeks later, I was playing my first professional baseball game in Memphis, Tennessee. I was with the Chicago American Giants.
That is incredible. And you played two seasons with the Chicago American Giants, and then Major League Baseball called. Not the Negro Leagues, but the MLB, did they not, sir?
Well, see, you know, man, in my book, I tell about how that transpired because Major Leagues, they didn't scout us. And I was on the Major League, the Negro League team, after Jackie Robinson became a training ground for the Major Leagues. People don't know this, but Brett Rickey's long-range goal was to use the Negro League as a minor league system. They don't write about it much because a lot of our history was not written down. A lot of the stats you talked about was not written down also because the Negro League team could not hire a statistician to travel with the team. The players themselves kept a lot of their own records. In my book, Secrets of the Negro Baseball League, there's a way thing was happening back then because if a major league team were interested in a player that was on a Negro League team, they had to purchase his contract from the team he was on. The team he was on would get enough money from the major league to pay those older guys that was training us to keep the league going. This is what's hidden. This is something that's not written down about what happened in the Negro League, and this was after Jackie Robinson. And I sum it up by saying very little was written down about the Negro League from 1949 to 1963.
That is how Major League Baseball used the Negro League, sir, as you were saying, as sort of a minor league, a farm league, if you will, for MLB. And yet it sounds like, you know, this was a relationship that was very asymmetrical in economic power and who got to call the shots. And sir, you got to the first day of spring training for the Chicago Cubs, and the unthinkable happened.
Right. I broke my ankle in two places. But what I really want to say, that ended my really major league career, but I felt I could still run as fast as I ever did, but my ankle never healed. It was broken in two places. But what people don't know, man, is that players like Hank Aaron, Ernie Banks, Willie Mays, all was just like I was. They had that long binding contract from the Negro League team they was on, and the Major League team that was interested had to purchase their contract. It's in my book, Secrets of the Negro Baseball League, because they didn't write about that. They didn't know what was happening back then. The Negro team was getting the players ready for the Major League because that was a money-making industry for the team at that time. It didn't last for about four or five years, but it ended up that way, yes.
Folks, you can find that book by Mr. Biddle at DennisBiddle.com. He also runs and he is the president of yesterday's Negro Baseball Players Foundation. And do you still have that store in Mayfair Mall? I remember seeing the store that I believe you've run for years with your wife, Patrice, in Mayfair, where you've got some of your memorabilia, your book, and you share some of your recollections of your time in both the Negro League and Major League Baseball.
Yeah, thank you. We do still have the store. Right now, it's not open. It will be open the 1st of November. It's called Legacy Sportswear. It's at Mayfair Mall. We moved to a different location, And that's why the store is not open at this time. So, it will be so open November 1st.
Yeah, check it out in Mayfair Mall. Again, folks, I'm talking with Dennis Biddle, the youngest living player of the Negro Leagues, in honor of MLB playoffs, game two of the wild card, Brewers and New York Mets meeting this evening. I'm going with my pops. Mr. Biddle, my dad was a pitcher as well. Never made it to any of the leagues. But I did want to ask you, sir, because I heard that you are the man who beat the man who beat the man. And yes, we're going to have to take a couple messages, but can you stick around for a little bit more? Because I want everybody to know you are the man who beat the man who beat the man when it comes to pitchers. And I want you to tell that story. Do you have a few more minutes for us, sir?
Yes, I do. I'll be glad.
Wonderful. You're not going to want to miss it. Again, talking with Mr. Dennis Biddle, the president of yesterday's Negro Baseball Players Foundation, the youngest living player of the Negro Leagues at a very young 89 years old. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. More to come, including a discussion with Sarah Spain, the strategic communications director of Emily's List. We're going to talk about that debate when we come back.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.